Nationally syndicated financial columnist Terry Savage. You read her in the papers, you hear her here. Well, I sounded like I was quoting a song lyric. And you can also read her at terrysavage.com. Joins us on Wednesdays. Today's Wednesday. Hi, Terry. How are you?
I'm good. The markets are good, more or less. And it's a slow day in summer.
Nothing wrong with that. Sometimes you don't want a lot of eventful stuff in the economy.
Exactly. Wait for Labor Day. So much is going to change. So much is going to happen. We'll have more inflation news. We'll have student loans hitting everybody's pocketbooks. We'll have all kinds of action. But even Congress is not in session now. So it's a little quiet.
After Labor Day is when those loan payments will begin.
Right.
You know, I've asked various guests on the Wintrust Business Lunch here about that. Some of them think that that'll be noticeable in the economy, but others sort of brush it aside. There's other numbers at play. It would just seem to me like if millions of Americans carrying trillions of dollars in debt now need to start paying on those loans, that's money that won't go to Target or cars or clothes or food, right?
I think that's going to be the big surprise. And I wrote a column about that a few weeks ago when, let me try and remember who it was, TransUnion, I believe, which tracks all the information they have not only on your student loans but on other credit, came out with a report saying that as of May 2023, 40 million consumers had student loans, $1.1 trillion worth will be required to resume payments. One in five will have to add a payment of $500 or more a month, and half will have to add a payment of $200 a month. And many of these people took out an auto loan, a mortgage, mm-hmm. a personal loan. So I think it's going to be a shock, and I think it'll be felt. I think we'll be doing stories in October, you know, when they traditionally start. Well, how will the holiday spending season be? I think you'll see a lot of references to the fact that consumers are pinched because of the additional budget woes of student loan repayments. That's my prediction. I rarely predict, but this one seems so common sense.
Yeah, how could
to know
it
there'll
not?
Be an impact. Yeah.
You know, and it's too bad. Ray Kaplan was on with us just before you, between 11:30 and 12, and she was talking about there are measures in place to mitigate those costs for most people, and most people don't know it. And you shouldn't have to find an attorney named Ray Kaplan in Chicago to help you get out of this debt.
If you want to help you get out of this debt, find attorney Ray Kaplan, RayKaplan.com, because I'm serious, she helped me with my column. There are a lot of ins and outs, and there is one program where you have to apply before year end.
Yep.
I'm sure she talked about
it. She did.
She helped me with the new repay program, and so you're right. I don't know if they're counting on the fact that people won't understand these things. The
That's
government
it.
Doesn't have the ability to publicize it. I'm not quite sure why. We know that the current administration, the Biden administration, got stymied in its total forgiveness for some student loans, but they did expand these guidelines for having inflation income-adjusted plans.
So then if you didn't get what you wanted, President Biden, then how about run public service announcements or even commercials on TV, you know, serious-looking students, somber music, you're worried about your debt, there's a program in place, go to XYZ and find out how you can minimize your payments. I haven't seen that public service campaign.
No, we haven't.
They should have that. They should have that.
I think they should, but they've got a lot of other things on their plate right now.
Okay, let's talk about a couple of other things. What happened to Target?
Well, according to the reports, I mean, they missed their sales because their forecast. And you would say, well, is this the beginning of consumerism? A lot of it is attributed to that backlash. This is, you know, we had the Bud Light backlash, and then there was the Target backlash where they had certain t-shirts, Pride merchandise, but in the celebration of Pride Month, all of a sudden this whole woke versus don't wake up has impacted sales of some major corporations in a big way. So that's part of what happened
really?
To Target, whereas other companies
really?
That moved downline a little bit have done pretty well in the last
Target's
six
always
months.
Been a very progressive company about social issues. They're headquartered in Minneapolis. I just followed them a little bit because I used to work up there, and I wouldn't be surprised to see them selling LGBTQ or rainbow-friendly stuff, but that kind of hurt them, you're saying?
They said. Yeah. Absolutely. The backlash
that?
Against Target.
What a shame. What a shame.
Exactly. This is really interesting that it's hit a number of companies. And you remember it sort of hit Disney anyway in Florida when the company supported some gay rights initiatives. I'm talking about equality initiatives. And so it's just hard to have a backlash against Disney because your kids don't care what the T-shirt looks like. Your kids don't care what the beer commercial looks like. They still want to go to Disney. So Disney has its own set of business issues, but I'm not sure that the backlash on this whole social media woke issue has hit them as hard as it clearly just did to Target.
One of our listeners at the age of 62 is collecting Social Security, and she wants to know if she can earn income or will that penalize her Social Security payments.
Can I please put first things first? If within the last year you took Social Security at 62, and if you do have the option of earning money, go back to them. You can do that within 1 year.
Wow.
Pay back all the benefits they gave you and say, no, I want to turn that clock back. You can within 1 year. Okay? That's number one. Number two, secret, big secret that I'm not telling anybody except our friends here about. You know, Larry Kotlikoff and I are working on a new book on Social Security, which will be out this fall. And Larry calls it the retirement trap scam. And that is, quote, falsely telling early retirees they will lose lifetime benefits by returning to work. Yes, if you continue to work and collect Social Security, your check will be reduced. But somewhere down the line, and in fact, currently, if you don't receive your reach your full retirement age in the current calendar year, you will lose 50 cents on the dollar in benefits for every dollar earned above $21,240 in 2023.
Wow.
So yeah, you could go back to work and earn less than about $21,000.
Okay.
You lose a third of your benefit, a third of each dollar if it's your retirement year. But the whole point is that they adjust for that later. It's Larry's big bugaboo. It doesn't mean that your entire lifetime earnings will be reduced because, quote, every dollar taxed away by this earnings test is returned to the worker via an arcane complex provision called the adjustment of the reduction factor, or the ARF. It more than restores benefits lost to the earnings test.
Wow.
By permanently raising benefits that have previously been taxed away. You're going to love our book, but I just want to let you
when
know.
Do number those one, kick in? When does that kick in then? Later? After?
Later, when you reach full retirement
that's
age.
That's what
okay?
I thought. Yeah.
It's really complicated, so that's why there's a book. And the next subhead on this is called Clear as Mud, okay?
Hey, but did you also say, Terry, that I can earn up to $20,000 without suffering any penalty?
You can earn up to $23,000 if you're without a reduction of benefits.
Got it.
But if you earn more than $21,240 in 2023, above that, you currently lose 50 cents on the dollar. Somewhere down the line, you'll eventually get it back. However, the real mistake is not me telling you that, oh, that's okay, don't worry about the reduction because you'll get it back down the line.
The real
mistake is starting out with permanently lowered benefits on which future inflation adjustments will be made, and not knowing that if you did it within a year, you can go back. You'll have to pay back everything you received. It's worth doing, especially if you know you've got some income coming in and could be working.
Terry, how do I know when I'm eligible for Social Security? Is it, or what's my, like, is there a date by which you have to?
Well, currently, right now, everybody who's starting to claim will not reach full retirement benefits until age 66 and some months.
Okay.
But pretty soon, and I forget what year it is, I should know in the next 2 years or three, 67 will be full retirement age for all younger people. So you'll have to work till 67
to be full retirement age.
And you must claim at 70 because the benefits don't increase, but they do increase 8% a year from between 67 and 70.
If you're 62, you're eligible, but do you have to file? Do you have to?
You don't have to do anything.
Until you're 66?
Don't do anything. Don't take your benefits early. Figure out a way to earn more money. I promise you, I don't care whether you live to be 73 or 97. you will be happier if you will wait to collect your benefits till at least your full retirement age and preferably 70.
Here's your next question. Terry, my 28-year-old child has returned from working internationally for 5 years, about a month earlier than anticipated. Now unemployed. Suggestions on where to look for medical insurance? Thinking of a major medical plan? What questions should we ask that would be helpful? Where does somebody with no health care right now go to get insurance?
Oh, did you know that I just posted a column on this very subject? Seriously. So go to terrysavage.com because I literally just posted a column on this. And I wrote it primarily because a number of people, millions of people actually, let me just sidestep that question and I'll come back to it. Right now, well, let me put it this way. About 4 million Americans, including families with small children, are about to lose Medicaid. How did they get on Medicaid? Back in the pandemic, Medicaid was expanded, and anybody who lost a job, we didn't want them to not have any health insurance coverage. Each state sets its Medicaid program, and lots of people, millions, moved on to the state Medicaid programs. And they stayed there for the last couple of years, not having to prove that they had low income and qualified. Now, starting in May, just a few months ago, each state is required to recertify all these Medicaid recipients. Well, some of them got jobs and got health insurance at work, but they decided, gee, it was cheaper to get Medicaid, keep Medicaid than have the deduction on their payroll for health insurance. Now they will have to be cut off from Medicaid and take their job insurance. But a lot of people got low-paying jobs that don't offer health insurance. Mm. And they, or have not worked, and they may still qualify for Medicaid. They're getting a letter in the mail saying, it's time to re-up. You have to recertify. Show us that you have low or no income and qualify for the state plan. But some of them have jobs that are a little above the income level for the state Medicaid plan in any state. So what do you do? People wrongly think that Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, is too expensive. But that was adjusted to as part of the Inflation Reduction Act. I don't want to go there. And now there are silver plans in Obamacare. Now I'm coming back to this woman whose son is coming back and needs insurance. If you go to healthinsurance.gov, you have to put in your state. If you are not working, there are free programs that are silver programs, and there are very low-cost programs, even if you are working, that will give you great health insurance coverage under Obamacare, and it's at healthinsurance.gov. Now, some states have a state kind of a marketplace. Some participate in the federal marketplace, but you put in your age and your state of residence, and that's how you get it.
Back to calls and text messages. But first, Terry, anything else you want to throw in before we do?
Yeah, I just want to make sure I didn't misspeak. So if you want to know the Obamacare website, worth trying if you don't have health insurance and you earn too much for the state's Medicaid program, it is healthcare.gov. Do not listen to the rumors that it's too expensive. You might be very surprised.
Okay, 312-981-7200. What's a good beginning amount for a treasury bill, Terry? I want to buy one, not sure how much to spend.
Well, you can begin with as little as $100. And if you go to terrysavage.com, right on the front page under links, important links, is how to buy treasury bills. But what's the right amount? You're locking it up for 3 months or 6 months. You're getting a really nice interest rate, maybe and likely higher than you could get in your, I'll tell you right now, the 3 month is, let me just go here. 3 month is yielding 5.45.
Wow.
The 6 month, 5.51 right now. So you're getting a nice high rate. And if you, I mean, you always need some money on the side that's liquid. It's in your money market fund. It's certainly not earning much interest, but what if you had to do something unexpected and needed to write a check? But if you can tie your money up for 3 or 6 months, do it. There's no state income tax, by the way.
And what are you going to put? What are you going to put your money in that in 3 months is going to yield 5.5%? I mean, you could put it in your 401k in equities in a mutual fund, but it's probably not going to do better than 5.45 over 3 months.
Know. you know, that's, of course, the name of the game today. Right now, short-term rates and even 10-year treasuries at about 4.25% are yielding, on a real basis, more than inflation. The real big question for people, which I'm thinking about for next week's column, is, okay, it's been wonderful. I love getting 5.5% for 6 months. But what if? What if, oh, you know, the economy slows, the Fed wins the game against inflation, they start cutting interest rates because there's maybe a recession, which we've been talking about, I know, for a year. What if rates come down? The real question is, the first question was, do I buy stocks? Because, gee, the average annual return has been 10%. And this year, you're up over 15, 16% in the S&P 500. So do you feel bad that you had T-bills yielding 5.5? No, you had no risk, and it let you sleep at night. So the first question is always stocks versus interest rates. Right now, interest rates are so attractive, you can pat yourself on the back. The second question is about to be, so I can have 5.5% for 6 months, but should I lock up 4.25 for 10 years? Well, I don't know about that. A lot could happen. How about in, let's say, 3 years, 4.6%? You know, maybe the time has come or is coming to lock up your money that you know you're not going to risk in the market for a little bit longer term. Could rates ever go back to 3% again? Absolutely. When? I have no idea.
Okay, here's come your phone calls for Terry. We'll start with Mike. You're on WGN. Mike, what's your question?
Yeah, Terry, I've got a relative that's going to be retiring. He was a teacher, and I think his wife is a teacher, too. And he's not going to sign up for Medicare because he thinks he can get it off of his wife's Social Security benefits. Is that possible?
Well, first of all, there's going to be a huge offset. His wife is also a teacher, and she's going to also collect Social Security?
Yes.
Okay, well, first of all, and you don't get Medicare on someone else's benefits. But the first thing is, you have to figure out what Social Security each of them will receive, because there's a huge offset for public pensions.
Sure.
I always send people to Larry Kotlikoff, my friend, buddy, and now co-author's website, MaximizeMySocialSecurity.com. It costs $39. And you put in what your pension benefit's going to be, and it'll tell you how much of your Social Security benefits will be cut. And then you pay for your own Medicare. I hope there's enough left in your Social Security check to cover the cost of Medicare or a Medicare Advantage program. But that's an individual program, and they both need to do some Social Security Medicare counseling. Now, you can do it the expensive way, which is a wonderful place called 65incorporated.com. I'm trying to remember the name of the other group that does it for less, but it's still expensive. Or you can start out by spending the $39 figuring out what your benefit will be and what your costs will be for the Medicare Part B that you have to pay. Most people have that deducted out of their Social Security check.
Okay, Mike, I hope that helps. Good luck. Speaking of that, Terry, how does Social Security calculate our payments? Is it on how many years of employment is it based?
Well, you need 40 quarters, 10 years of covered earnings, and then it's the highest 35 that determine your benefit. And then if you keep working, they're supposed to recalculate, especially if you earn more, and especially if you've been earning over the cap, which goes up. But the truth of the matter is, it's like a black box there. And what we're finding out lately is their black box is quite flawed. So yes, but you do need 10 years, 40 years of coverage
to
qualify. Let me just add, or you could be a spouse or an ex-spouse who was married 10 years, and there are some other ways you could qualify for Social Security. But if you talk about your own benefits, that's how they calculate.
Yeah, well, so if your spouse has worked for years and years and years, but you haven't, when you both reach retirement age, Social Security eligible age, you both will draw Social Security checks, right?
You can collect on your spouse's earnings record and on your late spouse's earnings record. You can get a widow's benefit. Yeah. You get a reduced benefit as a non-working spouse if your spouse is still alive. And let's just suppose you were married 10 years, a long, long time ago. You can find out what your ex-spouse's benefit is. They'll calculate for you whether that benefit is higher than your own benefit.
Lots of interesting information from Terry today. 312-981-7200 is the phone number with your questions and comments. We'll get to more of your questions for Terry after we get you more business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Chicago-based Cresco Labs reported a 9% revenue drop in the second quarter compared to the same period last year. The cannabis company operates Sunnyside Dispensaries. $198 million in revenue was higher than the first quarter, and its retail operations reported 4% growth. The company posted a net loss of $43 million for the second quarter. It added 5 Sunnyside stores in Florida and Pennsylvania. A new report says Illinois collected 3% less marijuana taxes in the fiscal year that ended June 30th, even though recreational weed sales went up 5% during that period. Crane's reports the state collected $451.9 million in cannabis taxes, compared with $466.8 million last year. Recreational cannabis sales during that time rose to $1.59 billion from $1.5 billion. The Illinois Department of Revenue didn't have an explanation for the decline, but the report says it's likely because of a complicated system for weed taxes. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Business of Food Time, there's Steve Alexander.
Thank you. I've got a question about meat. Which is tastier, fresh or frozen?
Oh, there is no question. Frozen is much, much better.
It's actually a bit of a trick question because what is being sold fresh at the grocery store may have been sitting there for a while.
If you have two ribeyes sitting next to each other, if one had been sitting there for a couple hours and the other for a couple days, you're going to get a very, very different eating experience.
Who he is and why he says that after I thank the Chevy Silverado HD for being our sponsor today. Experience your life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. Your name, sir?
My name is Alex Borg, and my title is Head of Development.
And Alex works at a new-ish food retailer in the Chicago area called Wild Fork, where everything in the store is frozen fresh, from meats to veggies to desserts.
If you freeze it right the way that we do, not only are you locking in that quality at its peak freshness, you're also able to get a much more consistent quality.
And how they freeze their food is not like the way we do it at home, where we put a package of hamburger in the freezer. Wild Fork has a blast freezer about 15 feet tall, shaped like a spiral, and the meat goes in at the bottom and works its way up.
And the meat goes around the spiral as it's freezing.
And it is fast.
Something that's a thinner cut is going to freeze in minutes. Something that's a bigger, heavier cut is going to take a little bit longer to freeze.
And he says there's an environmental benefit to frozen food.
From not having to waste products by throwing away expired inventory after a few days. And we pass those savings down to our consumers.
And if you're going into the Wild Fork store and you're trying to decide whether to buy some, let's say alligator tenderloins, but you're not quite sure how to cook them.
All of our store associates are trained on product knowledge, are trained on cooking methods. They get culinary training by professional chefs.
9 stores so far in Chicago. More to come.
We're expanding.
Are you hiring?
We're always hiring, so I'll look forward to your resume.
Well, you never know. There's a website.
That's right, wildfork.com.
And it's a snazzy website. It's fun to scroll through all of the different meat and seafood and fruits and veggies and bakery goods, but it looks a little expensive.
Not at all. We're very, very competitive as far as pricing.
And if you go there, you'll see a wide variety of proteins, including under specialty meats, things like venison and ostrich, and 2 of my late mother's favorites, beef liver and beef tongue. WildFork.com. On the food calendar, today is National Rum Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Got to tell you, I've been eating that Wild Fork food. I'm having one of their steaks tonight. It is really good. A few more minutes with Terry Savage at TerrySavage.com, the syndicated financial question, answering a lot of questions today. Terry, you ready to go into more?
Ready to go.
Let's start with Sandy. You're on WGN. Sandy, what can we do for you?
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. Regarding the Treasury bills, I understand they're short term, 3 or 6 months. After the 6 months, does that automatically roll over, or are you obligated to have to cash out after 6 months?
No, you read that article at terrysavage.com, but let me tell you that when you place your order, I want to buy $250 worth of 6-month treasury bills, this 26 weeks at next week's auction. I'll accept whatever the rate is, which will be about what it is today. All of a sudden, let's say it was $1,000. You will notice on Monday afternoon after the auction and the rate is set, they will take $979 or whatever it is and leave the interest for that 6 months in your account. You get the interest up front. At maturity, and then when you place that order, you have a chance, as you scroll down in that order form, please automatically renew twice, three times, four times. And I agree to accept whatever the rate is at that auction. Then 6 months from now at the next auction, another amount of interest will drop in. If you don't agree to automatically renew once or twice or up to four times, you will get the full $1,000 back. You've had the interest up front.
So there you made your money at the beginning, and then you get the...
Right.
But Terry, why would I commit to extra terms since I don't know what the rate's going to be?
It doesn't matter. It's going to be the rate that is set by all the biggest global players saying, what rate do we demand from the United States government to lend to the United States for the next 6 months? It is the rate set by the marketplace. So if you know, hey, I want safety, I don't want this money back. I don't have any plans to use it. By the way, you can always change your mind up until a few days before the auction say, whoops, no more renewals. I need that money. I'm going to put a down payment down or buying a car, whatever. Then you could change your mind. But otherwise, you go, yeah, I'm going to take whatever the market rate is. I always do in the bank with CDs. Just the bank was kind of not giving me for a year and a half anywhere near the market rate. Now banks are getting competitive. So you could compare with what a bank would give you.
Sandy, I hope that helps. I think it does. This is Elsie on WGN with Terry Savage. Hi, Elsie.
Hi, Terry. Thank you for taking my call. I'm stunned that I even got through. But my question is, I heard you mention about the cap in Social Security. And my question is, why is there a cap? And why don't they just get rid of it? What was the point of a cap in the first place?
Well, in the first place, so that is what Larry calls the fatal flaw of Social Security, the initial financing, which, you'll read it in the book, which he literally, I said, Larry, you really want to say this? He said, it's what it is, Terry. I said, I agree. It's a Ponzi scheme. They've kept it going. So initially, it seemed like that the caps were lower, but it was still low enough that it taxed enough money, they thought, to keep the thing going. Congress will be faced in the coming years with, forget all the problems existing with Social Security and its benefits calculations now, it will be faced with raising more money. And one of the many things they could do is say, hey, no, we're going to raise this cap well over 100. I mean, we'll tax all of it or raise it a lot to 250,000, and you'll pay, don't forget, you pay half and your employer pays half.
That makes sense.
It's money that you don't get to spend. It would have an impact on the economy. It could be that would be the solution. Raising the Medicare cap could be a solution. Adjusting retirement ages again could be a solution.
Yep.
But the reason nobody's doing anything is because nobody's going to win. Remember when the president at the State of the Union said, and I guess we can all agree, we don't want to do anything to Social Security. And the Republicans who don't like anything the president says had to go, yeah, we agree with that. We're not going to hit Social Security. So everybody agrees it's too painful and it's too politically dangerous to touch Social Security until we're running out.
I got about 30 seconds left, and maybe we can help Catherine if we go quick. Catherine, you're on WGN. What do you need? You're on the air.
Hi. I am 64. I'm still working. I am divorced. I was married over 20 years. I have some people telling me that I should be collecting Social Security based on my husband's Social Security until I reach full retirement age. Is that something I can really do?
If you claim on your husband, because you're too old. The law was changed a few years ago, and people born after 1954 cannot do that kind of a thing, number one. But number two, you don't want to claim before your full retirement age, whether you claim on your own or your ex-spouse's, and Social Security will give you whatever is higher. But you want to wait till your full retirement age to make any claims.
That's the end of the show. Terry will join us next Wednesday. Catherine, Elsie, everybody, I hope that helps. Terry, I've got more questions from listeners today that I'll throw at you next Wednesday.
Absolutely. Or they can post at terrysavage.com on the Ask Terry blog. I'm going to catch up this week, I swear.
She's good at that. Okay, thanks, Terry.